to my dearest friends. I am honored to welcome you back once more for a long overdue return to the warp and for an exploration into the darkest denizens of that immaterial plane. The sheer breadth of the cosmos is truly something magnificent to behold. Across the fathomless void, the lights of those billions of stars have illuminated countless worlds through the ages. And though true eons have passed, we know that there has been one constant through all of time. And that would be for mortals to hold an irrefutable propensity towards violence. This violence is often accompanied by rage and hatred, often so bloodthirsty that it eclipses all logical thought. But since our plane of reality is inherently linked with the psychic dimension of the warp, all of those emotional energies have gradually been reflected, and in ages past, those individual motes of hatred manifested into the greatest of chaos gods, Khorne. He is known by a thousand titles, but most commonly we refer to him as the Blood God, the Lord of Skulls, or the Great Butcher, with his slaughterous followers screaming out the grisly battle cry, "Blood for the Blood God, Skulls for the Skull Throne." They are quite literal with this mantra, as Khorne is said to sit upon a throne of carved brass, found atop his mountain of skulls, consisting of at least one skull from every species to have ever lived. And with the greatest of his champions, or most worthy of his adversaries, finding their remains closer to his blazing presence. From his great peak, he watches the endless wars of the galaxy, though on very rare occasion, and only when gripped with an incomprehensible rage, will he stand, taking up the colossal blade known as Woebringer, before cleaving down, sundering reality itself, from which an ocean of blood will pour to drown out the material plane. But it is not just blood to emerge from such a wound, for out from this realm of gore will march the legions of cornate demons. In the briefest terms, a demon is a manifestation of immaterial energy given form, most often being created out of the powers of their patron god, but sometimes occurring naturally from the undulating currents of the chaotic warp. They can range greatly in power, with some of the smallest demons only being bubbling little nurglings or flightless imps, incapable of much at all. But the largest will be minor reflections of the gods themselves, harnessing the very essence of their power as they lead the demonic incursions to spread chaos through the mortal realms. In the case of Khorne, his most powerful champions are of the Bloodthirsters, who will frequently be found at the head of his rampaging armies. These great hosts are known as the Blood Legions. And while we usually think of the demons of Khorne as being the thoughtless personification of pure violence, we must remember that Khorne is often associated with the themes of martial order that can come about from war. And so these qualities are also found within his legions, though to a far lesser degree than their sheer bloodthirstiness. As such, when compared to the armies of the other gods, the Blood Legions seem to follow a strict hierarchy, which appears to be based upon the strength, ferocity, and power of the individual demon. We have no idea how many Blood Legions exist, but we do know that they are each split into 8 cohorts, further subdivided into 8 demonic packs, which are led by a herald or an ascendant demon prince. there is an immense variety between the different packs, as they all tend to be based upon the general whims of the demonic lords who rule over them, and of the domineering will of whomever the champion is that leads the larger cohort, or of the entire legion. For instance, one of the most notable will be of the blood legions of the Red Tide, which are made up almost entirely by blood letters, who gush forth into reality from crimson warp rifts, almost like a literal tide of blood, intent on overwhelming the mortal souls by sheer number, eviscerating any and all who find themselves caught in their path. The Hellfire Legions, meanwhile, are the most ranged, focused of Khorne's Neverborn, where they will often besiege mortal bastions with innumerable hosts of demon engines, levying skull cannons, soul grinders, and sometimes even lords of skulls, to bury their victims beneath salvos of bloody fire. The Legions of Brazen Thunder clearly cannot wait to spill blood in Khorne's name, as they are infamous for their fearsome speed, their demons riding atop racing blood thrones or thunderous blood crushers, flanked by rabid packs of flesh hounds, relentlessly bounding alongside. There are obviously many more varieties of Blood Legion, but those three are just some of the most notable and most destructive to have been levied upon the mortal souls of the galaxy. Regardless of their composition, when the demons of Khorne do emerge within reality, they do so only with the raw hatred, incandescent rage, and endless thirst for blood, as is held by their patron god. The cohorts will tear themselves from the warp, sundering the thin walls between our dimensions, with the lesser demons spurred on by monstrous entities lashing their brazen whips, whilst others blare out a nightmarish dirge from brass horns, signifying that indeed this is the end of days. The mighty bloodthirsters will slay entire squads worth of fodder with each sweep of their colossal axes, while the tides of bloodletters bound through the field, mopping up the endless victims, until their world simply drowns in a rising tide of blood. Yet, we mustn't get ahead of ourselves in singing Khorne's praises too much, lest we incite the Inquisition's gaze. But in order to best understand the many facets of Khorne, perhaps it would be best for us to learn a little more about his varied legions. We will begin with the lesser demons, before moving on to the heavier support, and then of his champions, and finally of the greater demons who exist as the living incarnations of Khorne's wrath. And so, my dearest friends, now that we've gotten the blood pumping, I do believe that it is time for us to begin. Do be warned, however, that if you ever hear the calling of the brass drums of war, that only death will greet you. For they do, in fact, herald nothing less than the blood cohorts of the demons of Khorne. To begin our sermon, it only makes sense to start with the most common of Khorne's demons. And so, let me introduce you to the warmongering cohorts of the Bloodletters. Born from the endless energies of hatred, spite, rage, and all other such feelings which naturally precipitate violence, they take their form within the warp, spontaneously appearing from the drifting Empyrean currents at the behest of Khorne's bloody will. They generally fill the role of bulking out the Blood Legions as common warriors, making up the enormity of that crimson tide which has poured out from the warp to stain a thousand innocent worlds with the deep redness of immaterial gore. But to call these demons as common is quite a disrespect, and it certainly undersells the violent capabilities of a pack of bloodletters. Physically, they are monstrous beasts, boasting traits which we might consider as being quintessentially demonic. It is important to mention, however, that the appearance of a demon as a physical entity is mostly a byproduct of the maddening energies of the warp, as they are simply made up of that immaterial essence. But regardless, for our purposes, let us ignore this abstraction and focus on their physicality. To start with, they are rather tall, thought to stand somewhere between 7 and 8 feet. But it is quite challenging to give a proper estimate here, as they are most often hunched over, giving them the impression of being slightly shorter, though we know that they can rear up in preparation for delivering a deadly sweep. Their leathery skin is most often tinged to the hot red color of fresh blood. But they have been witnessed across the full range of crimson, sometimes bordering on the rusty brown of dried meat, and due to the madness of the warp, might even appear to be colored as living flame. But this leathery skin is often spiked, or at least studded, by what appear to be odd protrusions, while their back is crested by a similarly violent-looking series of growths. This all envelops their otherwise spindly and somewhat crooked-looking frame. But make no mistake, for we will still be able to clearly see the striations of incredibly dense musculature, which provides them with their unnatural strength. It can be quite unnerving to see a rabidly bounding bloodletter sprinting towards you, not only because it is a demon, but also because their legs are curiously bent, almost as though they were digitigrades. Though the important fact is that this provides them with a terrifyingly explosive speed when they do decide to sprint. Atop all this is the merciless face of a demon born out of hate. Their two eyes of burning coal sit atop a pointed and horned head, split by its snarled and fanged maw, within which lashes a forked tongue, often seen tasting the air as the beast lusts after hot blood. Their horns sometimes end in brass tips, and while they don't usually wear armor, it is not unheard of to see chosen bloodletters graced with spiked vambraces or cornate symbols etched onto immaterial metal, though those are usually reserved only for the champions. This really doesn't need mentioning, but the violent bloodlust of the bloodletters is truly astonishing. They exist only to rip and tear, to shed blood for the blood god, to claim skulls for the skull throne. And while they would do all this with their immaterial hands, Khorne has granted each and every bloodletter with a weapon known as a hellblade. These are jagged swords of black iron, thought to be a part of the bloodletter's own essence, and which can never be separated from their demonic grip. They burn brightly to become red hot around the edges as the energies of Khorne flow through them. And it is said that a single cut from a hellblade is enough to sunder the soul of any human, and that the wound will never heal, leading to their inevitable deaths by exsanguination. Still, with all that said, they are known to sometimes march in formation, which is honestly quite surprising for demons as violent as these. Some of their kind are even seen to carry banners to Khorne, or will blow through brass horns. Though, of course, as soon as they locate their victims, all structure will evaporate, and the bloody demons will turn rabid, screeching out their otherworldly cry as they bound away to begin the charnel slaughter. As an additionally unusual fact, they are sometimes known to speak to their victims, choking out in a guttural spray their dark vows of death upon all they find. This, of course, is rarely heard over the cacophonous clamor of war. When fighting, the bloodletters are known to compete with one another in their pursuit of claiming either the most skulls or simply the skulls of the most dangerous opponent. Because of this, they will sometimes attack one another to claim the skulls of a nearby bloodletter. But really, they're just attempting to honor themselves before Khorne, as a trove of skulls and a tide of blood might very well distinguish an individual bloodletter enough that he is chosen as a herald or even a champion. They will obviously never retreat, fighting to the bitter end, slashing out with their burning hatred until they are finally slain and dragged back into the depths of the warp. But however nimble the bloodletters might be, they can't hold a candle to the monstrous speed and unwavering persistence of the fleshhounds. These are the great war dogs of Khorne, easily taller than a space marine when on their hind legs, who, when unleashed upon a field, will sprint out at such speeds that they have been known to chase down enemies attempting to flee in Chimera tanks. Further, when we look at their immense jaws and the sheer size of their fangs, we can understand how any prey they catch will almost certainly be eviscerated in a short yet immensely bloody affair. Within the brass citadel of the warp, at the very base of the Throne of Skulls, there exists a class of Khornate entities known as Furnace Demons, whose sole task is to forge an endless supply of brass collars, which are clamped around the crimson necks of the fleshhounds. It is believed that the flames of that forge burn solely from the incandescent hatred that Khorne feels towards Psykers, and that this energy is imbued within those collars, creating an aura which saps the abilities and strengths of any psychic individuals who come too close to the hounds. As a final and quite amazing fact, the fleshhounds are known to stalk most every plane of the warp, often in packs so large that even greater demons must tread lightly, lest they be dragged down by the ankles and devoured by the rabid hunters. Even though we previously discussed the Blood Legion of the Red Tide, which uses an overwhelming sea of minor bloodletters to overwhelm their mortal victims, we need to realize that this is not the only configuration for the armies of Khorne. The Blood God boasts a truly grisly assortment of demonic servants, many of whom are far bulkier, far more resilient, and are capable of inflicting violent devastation upon even the most heavily fortified of opponents. I shall begin with what I consider to be one of the most iconic of Khorne's heavy servants, being of the lumbering juggernauts, who, when ridden by a snarling bloodletter, become known as blood crushers. The juggernauts themselves are monstrous beasts, born within the very heart of Khorne's realm, where the furious rage of those rampaging demons are given form within thick plates of carved brass. And to be clear, this metallic shell is akin to their skin, for they are fused at the moment of creation. So there is no such thing as a juggernaut without its armor. In any event, beneath, dense sinews of iron are pulled taut, while their long veins carry naught but burning flame, which often seeps through their shell, giving them the appearance of being wreathed in demonic fire. Within his realm, they are confined to great pens, charging and battering one another with the brutish simplicity of a mindless bull. They will crush any foolish being to approach them. Yet, rather strangely, upon their backs, each and every juggernaut has what appears to be a seat, almost certainly intended for some champion to claim. This, of course, is by design, as the greatest of Khorne's servants, should they prove strong enough, may step forward to prove their worth by wrangling control of a rampaging juggernaut, only to claim it as their hellish steed. When a bloodletter achieves this, they become known as a blood crusher, groups of whom will then form into small units of demonic knights, certainly formidable enough to obliterate an unsuspecting enemy flank, and, rather impressively, when amassed in the brazen thunder legions, they have even been known to trample tank companies or bring low mighty imperial knights. Sometimes, however, death must be levied from afar, which is where we find the war machines of the skull cannons. According to some esoteric inquisitors from the Ordo Malleus, it is believed that Khorne may forge these artillery pieces by hand, though of course there would be absolutely no way of proving this as true. Regardless, they are siege engines, consisting of what appears to be a grotesquely enslaved and malformed demon, hauling a large cannon atop its armored back, which is then operated by a pair of gnashing bloodletters. With that said, the entrapped demon is actually the one in control, being so focused on its murderous desires that it can exert its will over the lesser bloodletters, grinding along to wherever it likes, to unleash death at its own whim. The most interesting thing about this engine, however, is that as it moves across a battlefield, it will scoop up the amassed bodies, sometimes dead, sometimes alive, which are then to be incinerated within its fanged maw, and the charred bones from this procedure are fired from the cannon, with the skulls said to scream with the otherworldly pain of their victims, empty sockets weeping with immaterial blood through their flight. The Khornate legions often utilize soul grinders in their armies, standing as yet another disgustingly monstrous fusion of a demonic entity and warp forge steel. Scuttling along on their enormous legs, they may rip and tear through any bastion wall, belching out warp fire from their blazing maw, before cleaving down with their burning swords with all the fury of the blood god. On this topic of demon engines, I will mention that there are plenty of Khornate machines which, while effective, are not often found in the demonic legions and are typically reserved for the warbands of the Chaos Space Marines, who have claimed them from the hell forges of the Dark Mechanicus. This would include such things as the vicious blood slaughterers, the super-heavy brass scorpions, and even the nightmarish demi-titans known as the Lords of Skulls, who are formed by binding the essence of a bloodthirster within those monstrous engines. The reason we do not see these units as frequently in a pure blood legion is that the demonic armies are made up entirely from entities born within the realm of Khorne, or, are at least temporarily loyal, as is the case with the soul grinders. Whereas the demon engines I previously listed are generally born from the ambitions of powerful warpsmiths, who probably seek to one day assert their might over the warp itself. Thus, there would be some friction over where one's true loyalties lie. And the true cornate demons might just fall upon the engine forged by mortal hands and tear it asunder, only to devour the enslaved entity within. Structurally, I mentioned in our first chapter how the Blood Legions are divided into 8 cohorts, each subdivided into 8 demonic packs, which are led by a commanding figure, such as a herald, or perhaps a demon prince. Such individuals are champions to Khorne, who have consistently proven their might through the fathomless eons, and were thusly graced with the honor of leading in his bloody name. I will briefly point out that the champions may actually lead their blood packs against one another if they see a rival as weak, wherein which they will engage in a slaughterous battle, with the victor emerging to subjugate their former foes by absorbing them into their pack. This is also how one may ascend from pack leader to ruler of a cohort, and finally, if strong enough, to the demonic lord of an entire blood legion. In any event, when it comes to the champions of Khorne, the first which we may encounter would likely be of a herald. Essentially, they are ascendant bloodletters who, for spilling bountiful rivers of mortal blood and for offering up a continuously prodigious collection of skulls, will have been hand-chosen by Khorne himself for the chance to rise in his name. But gifts are not so graciously given, and so those selected will be pitted against one another in the skull pit of the Brass Citadel, where they will engage in a form of hellish tournament, possibly fighting one another, or perhaps wave after wave of rabid combatants to put down. Regardless, this will go on until only one prospective champion remains, who will then be imbued with the energies and powers of his fallen competitors, engorging his Empyrean form with the violent strength of Khorne, whilst his hellblade burns incomparably hotter, now to be known as his Blade of Blood. They will then be graced with a title, dependent on their habits in slaughter. So, for instance, a Skullmaster will be a herald who relishes in the frenzy of charging headfirst atop a juggernaut, crushing bones and corpses beneath their brazen rampage. Whereas the Bloodmasters are the most infamous of Khorne's bladesmen, carving deep paths of blood through countless foes with every swing of their blade. Being tasked with bringing Khorne's bloody rage to the material plane, they are naturally expected to lead his demonic packs, but will almost always be subservient to the Bloodthirsters and other such mighty champions found above. Some heralds will choose to ride atop armored demon engines, named as Blood Thrones, which are living chariots of unholy metal, infused with the essence of an enslaved and rabid spirit. Legends say the thrones are designed to resemble Khorne's own mighty seat, and that each one is forged around a brass core, carved from a small chipping of the Blood God's mighty throne. Naturally, it is a tremendous honor to be graced with such a gift, and typically, only the heralds known as Rendmasters are powerful enough to seize the reins of that mobile beast and to take their place at the head of a great host. Interestingly, the demonic engine will feast upon the mutilated carcasses of those slain by the Rend Master, with the remains and souls of the weak to be incinerated. But for the strong, their skulls will be preserved and will grow through its brass frame, ever to remain as ghastly records of the Herald's greatest victories. Of course, we cannot speak of Heralds without mentioning the greatest of them all, the chosen executioner of Khorne, the one known as Skull Taker. This demonic champion, whose true name is thought to be Ujul, wandered the realms of chaos for eons in his endless search for the greatest and most skilled of warriors to be found, all of whom would fall beneath his blade. He was selected to ascend as a herald after claiming 888 mortal skulls, a presumably simple test, for while in the arena, he beheaded every other prospective herald, earning him the blazing recognition of Khorne, the title of Sacred Executioner, and the name of Skull Taker. His weapon, known as the Slayer Sword, is likely the most powerful hellblade to have ever been wielded by a bloodletter, and in the hands of such a masterful duelist, it has violently ended the lives of a truly incomparable host of mortal champions. Fighting at Angron's side during the First War for Armageddon, he slew a quarter of the Grey Knight brother captains in single combat. While upon the world of Agrippina VI, he dueled the war boss at the head of a colossal orc war for a full day and night, eventually beheading the greenskin before his cohort of blood swept out across the planet to slaughter every last survivor that could be found. Skull Taker has always, and will always, seek out the greatest champions on a field, where he will challenge them to a duel with such a roar that the lesser demons of Khorne are to be enthralled in a bloodthirsty frenzy, pushing them towards greater acts of slaughter, while leaving the Herald and his victim to their fates. The cowards who deny his challenge will be contemptuously cut down and abandoned, but this quick death is certainly preferable to that which comes when one bravely steps forth and accepts. The Herald is a bladesmaster beyond reproach, and so, as the two engage in their duel, he will drag out the engagement, slicing here and there, severing tendons, flaying strips of skin, and once he has toyed with his victim enough and fully tested his skills, will he lash out to dismember the victim's every appendage. Limbless, helpless, and writhing in agony, the poor mortal will watch as Skull Taker reaches down, picks them up by their head, then sets their remains aflame. Clothes, armor, flesh, skin, it doesn't matter. It will all burn away, and once only the skull remains, will he wrench it free as his prize of war. After every battle, Skull Taker will return to the Brass Citadel to present Khorne with his macabre bounty. The vast majority will go to the Blood God, but the greatest champions, the few who actually tested Skull Taker to his limits, will be kept to himself and will be sewn into his great cloak, where the skulls of chapter masters, war bosses, exarchs, and other such legendary figures will remain forevermore. There is an argument to be made that since all demons are manifestations of their patron god's power, that we don't need to consider the weaker or lesser units, as the greater demons must, of course, be the purest of his servants. And though this is a reductionist take, in the case of Khorne, it does make some sense. as we are to now look upon the mightiest of his many demons, being of the infamous Bloodthirsters. I would wager that if I asked you to picture a cornate demon, that you would instinctively imagine a Bloodthirster, at which point the Inquisition would probably step forward and ask how you know what a Bloodthirster is. But veiled threats aside, the Bloodthirsters are the greater demons of Khorne, and are thus the most powerful servants to the Blood God, who are most often placed at the head of demonic cohorts, or are tasked to lead an entire Blood Legion on their paths of slaughter. There is truly nothing as vicious, nothing as violent, nothing as ruthless, and, if you'll pardon my pun, nothing as bloodthirsty in the entirety of Khorne's vast legions as of a Bloodthirster. They exude the raw essence of the Blood God with every step, with their very presence enough to incite frenzied charges from warriors on both sides of a conflict, as a sudden and uncharacteristic bloodlust fills the soul, urging mortals towards acts of glorious carnage, and the demons towards feats of unfathomable savagery. Physically, they are behemoths, but no two are the same. As a Bloodthirster grows more and more powerful, so too will his physical stature swell. And so, while a typical of their kind might stand around 10 meters in height, it is said that some of the largest are actually comparable, or even larger in scale, than of an imperial knight. As with most cornate demons, their demonic skin is usually tinged to a deep and bloody red. But it must be said that some Bloodthirsters are partially, or even entirely, coated in a shaggy layer of dark fur. Regardless, they will wear segmented plates of brass and wrought iron armor, which have been branded with the 8 blessings of Khorne, nullifying the abilities of Psykers, to whom the Blood God holds a special disdain. Despite their colossal bulk, these muscular beasts are known to fly across a battlefield, lifted up by the beating of 2 great leathery wings, carrying them to wherever the fighting is thickest and to where the blood runs its hottest. Like all cornate demons, they could simply use their otherworldly strength and ferocity to batter and rend apart most mortals with their gnarled and taloned fists. Yet if they are to spill blood in his name, then they will need weapons to do so most effectively. They may equip a wide range of deadly armaments, all designed for melee, of course, and so we will find them utilizing great axes possessed by the captive spirit of defeated greater demons. Gigantic swords of fire, forged from the burning hatred of the war god himself, and barbed whips formed of bundled sinew and sharpened bone. Their primary tools are all mighty enough to cleave imperial tanks in twain, but if an enemy flees, then to avoid a chase, the Bloodthirsters are known to lob throwing axes, or sometimes to just bellow out such a deafening scream that all mortals fall before them. Obviously, these are not as satisfying to the demon as of hacking their victim apart in a frenzy of rage, but it gets the job done, and it ensures that the blood of even the most nimble of opponents will be spilled in his name. 8 is a most holy number to Khorne, permeating every aspect of his realm, his spirit, and of his demonic legions. As such, it is unsurprising that there are 8 tiers of Bloodthirster, growing more and more powerful as you move up to that octupled zenith. the inquisitorial lords of the Ordo Malleus may indeed understand the full criteria of these tiers, but our own records are thus far incomplete. We do know the most common and likely lowest tier would be of the bloodthirsters of unfettered fury, who fulfill the typically violent role of a cornate lord of war, followed by those of insensate rage, who exist in a perpetual state of incoherently barbaric madness. And then to the wrath of corn bloodthirsters, who soar through the upper clouds to hunt down the mightiest mortals, who see themselves as beyond the reproach of the Lord of Skulls. As an interesting point on the tiers from our records, it seems as though there is an additional tier above the suspected eight, being of the exalted bloodthirsters. The reason I say this is because during the Blood Crusades, Skarbrand, himself an exalted bloodthirster, led a vanguard which consisted of eight other bloodthirsters, one of each tier below him, thusly placing him above the regular system. Regardless, this might just be us getting caught in the minutiae of wording. And so, given that I just mentioned his name, let us refocus our efforts onto Skarbrand, who is perhaps the most infamous bloodthirster to ever exist. For an Empyrean age, Skarbrand stood as Khorne's favored champion. None could compare to the sheer brutality of his violence, to his glorious paths of carnage across the mortal realms, nor to his blazing fury, and certainly not to the countless millions he dragged to the slaughter, nor to the quantity of systems he left lifeless in his wake. Yet, as with all things, the fickle hands of fate seem to have their own plans for Skarbrand. Tzeentch, that tricksome god of change, whispered an endless stream of goading slights upon Skarbrand, slowly fanning the flames of irritation into a truly incandescent rage. Until finally, when the time was right, simply stated that Khorne had paid no attention to a single one of the bloodthirster's many deeds. His blood aflame, Skarbrand erupted in a furious storm, taking up his axe before levying such a titanic strike against Khorne himself that it may very well have split the crust of an entire planet. Upon the blood god, however, it only cut the tiniest chip into his brass armor. Khorne turned, the full fury of the Lord of Blood bearing down upon this one pathetic betrayer, this insignificantly disgusting mote who thought he could raise arms against his god. He grasped Skarbrand in his burning grip and stood tall from his throne, towering atop that mountain of skulls, strangling the wayward bloodthirster until his demonic essence was reduced to naught but that incandescent hatred. Khorne then raised him high and threw him from the brass citadel. For 8 days and nights, Skarbrand hurtled through the immaterium as a blazing ball of flame, scarring the very fabric of unreality as he went. In the end, he crashed upon a demon world, his skin split, armor rent asunder, and his once glorious wings reduced to little more than tattered shreds and shattered bone. Bellowing out a cry said to be heard across the impossible breadth of the warp, he arose from the immaterial crater, took up his axes, and though now little more than a mindless beast of rage, would continue to serve the Blood God by claiming ever more skulls in his name. The exiled Bloodthirster has since been a relentless force of carnage through the material plane, appearing upon the world of Geistos during its fatal cataclysm, slaughtering an entire strike force of the Vorpal Swords, along with countless other Imperials. Quite sadly, if we can even feel sad about the fate of a demonic beast, no matter how many souls he claims, and no matter how many more millions he puts to the bloody sword, Khorne holds no room for mercy within his blackened heart. And so, Skarbrand will remain as an exile for the rest of time. In the wake of Skarbrand's betrayal and exile, Khorne, steaming with rage, channeled all of his furious anger into a new being and created the mighty Bloodthirster known as Angrath. This was to be his ultimate champion, superior in every way to that meek little whelp Skarbrand. Yet by all accounts, they actually seem quite fairly matched in strength and boast a similarly impressive history of violence. Khorne, however, has forbade the two from ever dueling, despite their frenzied desire to prove themselves as his greatest warrior. But if that day were to ever come, we can be sure that such a titanic quarrel would surely shake the very stars themselves. Unfortunately, however, whenever we find a monstrosity purported as being one of the strongest entities in existence, the records often weigh against their might. With Angrath, for instance, most of his references are related to him being defeated, probably to show up the strength of his adversary. For instance, Lorgar defeated him in a duel during the Horus Heresy. Then he was banished in single combat against Inquisitor Hector Rex, and then later had his demonic skull crushed by none other than Manius Khalgar. Similarly, Skarbrand has been defeated by several opponents, apparently being cleaved in two by Commander Dante of the Blood Angels, then was slain by an avatar of Cain upon the craft world of Beel Tan, and was later banished by Gilliman during the Terran Crusade. This ridiculousness only continues when we look upon Kabanda, Scourge of the Blood Angels, who was once considered so formidable that only the strength of Sanguinius himself was sufficient to best him in battle. However, in the 41st millennium alone, he was defeated by a brother captain of the Grey Knights, then by the semi-mythical figure of the Sanguinor, and then again by a mixed force of the Blood Angels and Grey Knights who assaulted his fortress upon a demon world, then failed to win the three-way battle upon Baal, and finally was banished by the demon Primarch Mortarion during the war in the Rift. So, unfortunately, despite how strong they are reported as being, it certainly seems as though Khorne gives his greatest challenges to his mightiest bloodthirsters. As we draw this to a close, we need to realize that the many demons of Khorne which I have outlined today are merely the most commonly encountered upon the field, and likely do not make up the full repertoire of entities born from the Blood God's endless malice. Perhaps these are just the configurations which that malevolent warp energy may take within the material world. And maybe, within the warp, we would find an entirely different range of immaterial horrors which simply cannot exist outside of the roiling depths of the Empyrean. The realms of chaos are never to be considered as static, as the dark gods are always reforming and reshaping their domain to suit their needs, which inherently shifts the very fabric of the immaterium. So, if the gods can twist and untwist unreality on but a whim, then I do not think it is inconceivable for them to conjure up new demonic entities which no mortal has ever before seen. Also, the dark gods have existed for eons and have influenced many more species than just mankind. So perhaps there are demons which manifest as a closer reflection to the anger and rage felt in a Xenos race, as opposed to humanity's interpretation of that raw emotion. Even with our discussion, there are figures which I have failed to mention, such as Karanak, the three-headed warhound of Khorne, who hunts down those who have insulted the blood god's pride through both the material and immaterial planes. Then there are the demon princes, those chosen mortals who spilled so much blood in his name that Khorne saw fit to ascend them into immortal beings, and who now lead his cohorts, if they prove strong enough to assert their place amongst the Neverborn. But none of this really matters. Khorne cares not for categorizing his servants on anything but their strength and their ability to enact ruthless carnage in his name. It matters not which demon slays a mortal, only that the mortal is butchered and rent asunder. It matters not whose blood is spilled, only that it flows in torrents and rivers to fill an endless ocean. And it matters not whose skull is taken, so long as in the end it is added atop the great mountain of his skull throne. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this sermon on the demons of Khorne in its entirety. And I do hope you enjoyed this explorative, if not bloody, affair. Still, this now once again marks the point to which I must depart. And so, before I leave you for another week, know that I greatly appreciate your time, and that until next time, I shall wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.